C6. Number 5B.
I said that Mrs. Eddy wrote this chapter as the last chapter. It was first published in 1891 in that famous 50s edition. And one wonders why this was not the very first chapter she wrote, because here she really gives, so to say, the groundwork of her revelation, of her discovery. Why didn't she do that first? Well, she didn't do it because she wasn't led to do it, because she wasn't inspired to do it, because her life experience had not yet prepared her to do so. She says that she was graciously prepared for this discovery. What was that preparation? Just think that before, the chapter before is animal magnetism, unmoth, meaning, and that's again a point which I like to make, that without handling animal magnetism scientifically, not through arguments, but scientifically, as we have been telling before, without that, no new revelation can pour into our consciousness. And we know that so well also from John Dorley, when he was asked, "Why do you think, John, that out of those million of Christian scientists who lived and who were in earnest in the movement, why do you think you have been chosen to see the signs of Christian Science? Why do you think?" Because the argument naturally was, well, everybody is at the point where he can receive revelation. And that's true. The question is he prepared to receive it? And John Dolly used to answer that he feels that he would be able, that he was able to see the signs of Christian Science, because he said, "I handled animal magnetism every day since I knew Christian Science." And you know that he was very strong on that subject of handling evil. Can you see the wonderful thing? Handling evil is not fighting against evil. Actually, handling evil is a term that is a shorthand expression and therefore is perhaps misleading. It really should mean handling the belief in evil, because there is no evil as a reality which has to be handled. What has to be handled is the belief that there could be evil. But we are allowed to make these shorthand expressions, handling evil, meaning by that unless we handle the belief in any other reality than God, God cannot come in and reveal himself to us. We put the veil over our consciousness as long as we believe in any other influence than the influence that comes straight from the divine mind. Therefore, again, can you see the wonderful thing? And you see, everybody who has spiritual sense and is spiritually minded are out for revelation. Nothing makes a student more happier. Oh, that's not English, huh? More happy, huh? Makes happier. Oh, yeah. Thank you that you understand me. Nothing really can make us happier, anyone, than to feel that he has got a revelation. Isn't that true? It's something terrific. Hmm? So the problem that can be stated is, how can I get revelation? And revelation here is pointed out in the sixth chapter. So go to the sixth chapter, because there is revelation. And we will not get it. We'll not get it. Why? Didn't we say what system thinking is? That you have a problem, and it is not a problem. The moment we regard the problem as a problem, then we tackle it from the atomistic standpoint. And it doesn't work. Therefore, if we want to have revelation, we jolly well have to go to the bigger system. And at least take in animal magnetism. At least. And to see that to solve the problem, so-called problem of the sixth chapter, lies in the fifth chapter at least. Isn't that clear? See, what's the use of going to the sixth chapter and all those wonderful subjects through mind, spirit, soul and so on the sixth chapter, seeing, yes, there is only one mind and that one mind comes to me as idea of mind and therefore retranslates the mortal mind back into mind, if I am not willing to handle first animal magnetism. First handle that there is no wrong translation in the first place taking place. See, the fifth chapter handles the belief that there is a wrong translation, that there is a belief of animal magnetism, a belief of evil. And if I don't handle that belief first, I still have a veil over my consciousness and it doesn't lift. It only lifts when I handle it from the root on the fifth chapter. And naturally, the fifth chapter is not possible without the fourth chapter. Because only the fourth chapter tells us what is mind, that mind must be spirit, that mind must not be mental, but that mind must be spirit. And so you have to go back to the fourth chapter too, and back and back until you have an attitude also of prayer. Because without the prayerful attitude, without knowing that the revelation is already within you, that you are already the revelation of God, we shut ourselves out. So, can you see what we can do with this matrix thinking? That we can see that the problem is not solved in a particular place. It's pointed out there, but the solution of it is always in the whole, in the whole textbook. That's why I would like to see that matrix of the textbook really ingrained in our consciousness, really written with a point of a diamond and the pen of an angel into our consciousness. That 16-fold structure of the textbook is something that just lives with us and is forming and molding our consciousness. Then we always see all 16 in one view. Yeah. Well, let's go now. We have to make a epitome here. Perhaps we could state it like this. The Christ translation. The Christ translation. See, that's the vertical. Now comes the horizontal. Manifests itself as what? As the retranslation of the false, as the retranslation of the false into the true constituents of being. Do you see what it means? It means the vertical is that says there is always translation going on from God to idea. Always, always, always does the divine revelation of mind come to us. At the point of the horizontal of the Christ, of the manifestation in spite of error, we must say, what is that error? That in spite of error. What is the error about the true system of reference. It's the false system of reference, the false constituents of being. So it retranslates through that manifestation the false constituents of being into the true constituents of being. Constituents of being you can put in brackets, mind to love. These are the constituents of being. Yes. All right, let me go further to the next chapter, physiology. Physiology would be the outcome, Christianity, the outcome of the sixth chapter, the outcome of that retranslation of the false constituents into the true constituents of being. What is the outcome? The outcome usually is man and the universe. So it must retranslate the mortal into an immortal. It must retranslate the physiological man or the physiological concept of man back into the true concept of man and the universe. Therefore, in an abbreviated way, we just could say what is shown here, that the Christ, when I have taken in the Christ in the sixth chapter, it has an effect on me. It has an effect on me because Christianity is the effect of the Christ idea. What effect does it have? Well, if it takes away the wrong constituents of being, then it takes away the wrong constituents of mortal man, of man, which is immortal, the physiological concept. And therefore, in place of the physiological concept, must show us the true idea of man. And that is what we have in this chapter through those two parts there. The chapter has two parts. In the first part, it shows how the Christ really takes away from mortal mind every concept of mortal mind until mortal mind disappears entirely. She ends there with that psalms that it says that it is like the wind, that like the flowers in the field, the wind passes over it and the place thereof is known no more. It disappears. And then turns to the second part of that chapter, where she shows that in thy light I see light, where one becomes aware that if the physiological concept of man disappears, what is left? Not the vacuum, but the true concept of man, the true idea of man. So when I awake in thy likeness, it shows, then I see the light. So here we have a sense that in the measure, as we lose the wrong concept, the physiological concept of man, we gain something. We don't lose anything. We gain something, namely that we begin to realize that man is something more than just a physical proposition, a physiological proposition, that is idea. So here we get the awakening to the point of awakening that man is idea and not physique. What we therefore can see is that the seventh chapter just draws the practical conclusion from the sixth chapter. If in the sixth chapter we have seen that the wrong constituents of being are resolved, then we must see that therefore mortal mind will be resolved. Therefore the physiological concept of mind, which is a concept of mortal mind, will be resolved, will disappear. And therefore we have a great sense of mortal mind falling back on its nothingness. that it disappears, that the only power it has is the power of self-dissolution. How shall we put it here in our matrix? Perhaps we can summarize it like this. The Christ translation, retranslates mortals into immortals. I think this chapter is very clear, very pronounced, I would say. In no other chapter in the whole textbook we find a description of, I think, over 20 pages, how mortal man is only a belief. A mortal man is not the reality of being, that it is just the construct of mortal mind, and that it must disappear just as mortal mind must disappear. So it's no use to try to prevent that. I think this is the courage we should have. The courage not to try to prevent that. That mortal mind and therefore mortal man disappears. We somehow try to cling to mortal man just like hell, because it is hell. People is always hell. So within us, I think, should be really awakening and a longing to see that there must come a mutation, a new mutation, out of man, into whatever that is. We do not know yet what it may be. We only may know from Jesus that he said, you can mutate out of the body, and I show it to you through the ascension, and I mutate out of the body, and yet I will be always with you. It is not the mutation into nothingness, because a mortal loses its form of a mortal, because he loses its form of a body, like in the ascension. I think that the time has come where we have to be courageous, where we have to see, the proposition is clear. We all go into ecstasies over the fact man is idea, and the moment we should see man as idea and not as body, we are up in hell and up in arms. We don't like it. See, this is the duality within us. The schizophrenic sense within us that we would like both opposites. We are not really making up our minds what we want. If we would make up our minds that actually being is of the nature of principle, and principle's universe is only a universe of ideas, then we shouldn't try to cling like hell to the body. And even ask those questions, will I still have the same body after death? Will I see my friends in the body after death? Will I meet them again? This is spiritualism. This is not progress. This is retrogression. This is trying to cling to something outgrown. And I guess many will be very surprised that if they make that transition, that they don't find their husband and wife and their children. And I, for myself, don't want to find any of them. I don't want to find anybody there. No. I had enough of it already here. I mean, no children. You see, ideas are so beautiful. Ideas are so beautiful. And so tangible. And so flexible. And so adaptable. And so able for restructuring, for forming new patterns, for constantly forming new patterns, so that the beauty is coming out all the time. There is more beauty in the textbook than in any picture you can see, in any music you can hear. There is more beauty in the textbook. It's the beauty of ideas, the beauty of this wonderful correlation of ideas, the intertwining of ideas, the forming of new patterns of these ideas, then suddenly to see the correlation of one pattern with other patterns, then you can see the beauty of restructuring a pattern into new patterns, how they complement each other. It's beauty. It's real beauty. And so we don't lose anything by letting the physical concept of man behind. We just have to have a bit courage and a bit trust that it's no use to be a lifelong Christian scientist and then still try to have another body after death. This is opposite. This is not reasonable. The second part of this chapter shows, I will awake in thy likeness. And thy likeness has no legs. Doesn't. But can you see how we have first to acquaint ourselves, get familiar, so to say, with this new concept? And then we are not afraid of it. Then we welcome it. Else it could seem very hard, very inhumane, but science is far above any human sense, far above. So let's love those chapters. Let's take them as what they say. Or let's drop science. Either take it as what it is, or let's drop it. But not in between. Not vacillate in between. To take the promise of science and not to take the reality of science. So we have here this wonderful translation of the Christ retranslating mortals into immortals. Thereby, can you see the horizontal? Thereby seeing that we are exalted above the mortal concept of man into the immortal concept of man. Can you see the horizontal line through that translation? And again, you could say, yes, many people would like to solve that problem of mortality. In a way, everybody longs to be an immortal. But they like to be a mortal immortal, an immortal mortal. This would be the nicest part, to be an immortal mortal. This, if somebody could come along and put that together, you see, then he really would be a big guy. He would really make an impact. But again, how can we solve that retranslation? You can't solve it by going through the text of the seventh chapter. You don't find really the pith of it, the motivating power behind it, the authority to do it behind it. The authority of it lies in the whole textbook. You need at least the sixth chapter to do that. At least. And we have seen the sixth chapter doesn't work without the fifth chapter. And the fifth chapter is misunderstood if we don't have the fourth chapter. We would misunderstand mind, small m, with divine mind, capital M. And we would never come to that point if not before that we would go through prayer and atonement, Eucharist and marriage. So, little by little, does it sink in that a chapter is a chapter, but does not reveal its magnitude unless it is seen as a chapter of the textbook and therefore reflects the whole textbook and is only something in relation to all the other chapters, or else it doesn't stand on solid ground. I think this is what we have to learn. Actually, can you see what is the very next issue in our daily conversation, that quoting single sentences as the old way, they can give us something in belief. They can give us something, but not science. That slowly we come out of that sentence quoting, on relying on sentences. These sentences can be a bugle call for something higher, but they always should be taken as something that asks us to go higher to the whole system. Then we get a sense of wholeness.